Hey folks, welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Molman, and this week the show is pre-recorded as I am unable to be with you live this week. I apologize. I, of course, want to be with you live, but couldn't be, so we've got the pre-recorded show for you lined up, and I hope you'll enjoy it. So I'm going to start the show out with some news that I haven't had a chance to get to on previous shows. You know, we have so much to talk about all the time, and especially right now, that I don't get to all the news that I want to. So going back to Tax Day, April 15th, there was a story that came out that fewer Americans now view their income taxes as fair. And essentially, we're seeing a trend, a downward trend, on the number of people who say that their taxes are fair. It's very interesting that anybody who has any knowledge of the tax system at all would think that their taxes are fair. But it reached a peak here in recent history in 2003 at 64% said that they believe that their taxes are fair. And I'm looking at the trend line. It slowly goes down from there to hitting a minimum of 55% in 2013. Now, previously, and the data goes back a little further, in 2001, only 51% of people believed that their taxes were fair. So there was a spike between 2001 and 2003, and I don't know if that was the war or what in particular caused that spike. But since that time, that high of 64% in 2003, there's been a gradual drop-off since, and 55% now view their income taxes as fair. The breakdown by party, 66% of Democrats, 70% of those who self-describe themselves as liberal believe that their taxes are fair, 51% of independents and 59% of those who consider themselves moderate believe that their taxes are fair, and 49% of Republicans and 45% of those who consider themselves conservative believe that their taxes are fair. So I think this is a trend thing. I think that as things continue to be bad, things continue to not get better, our tax burdens and what's coming out of our wallet continues to come up just in the raw cost of goods and everyday life continues to go up and things don't get any better. I think that people kind of realize that they're not getting what they think they should be getting for their dollar. Another interesting thing here, going back to 1957, there's a poll that tracks what people believe as far as if they think their taxes are too high, about right, or too low. And it looks here around 2012, 2010, or excuse me, it's about 2012, it looks like the percentage of people who believed their taxes were too high was about 49%. Those that thought their taxes were about right was 49%. And those that thought they were too low was only 2%. And that's something that's a trend here. Basically, people in general, the percentage that believe that they personally pay too much in taxes is fairly consistently above it's always above about 42%. And most of the time, it's up around 55 to 60%. The about right mimics that line. So as the percentage of those who believe it's too high goes up, the percentage of those who think it's about right goes down. And so those images are practically mirrored. And then the people who believe that their taxes are too low, and that's a pretty interesting group. You talk about the 99% and the 1%. Well, the 1% believe their taxes are too low, reaching a peak of about 3% or a little more in either 2011. So it's an interesting graph. It's an interesting thing to realize that kind of figure out from an economic standpoint where people stand, because A lot of people, you know, don't feel bad about paying taxes as long as they're getting something for it. And while certainly we can make that free market argument that wouldn't the money be better spent if individuals were making those decisions rather than the government, and we can make those arguments and have that discussion all day, I think it's more important to the immediacy of things to really look at the overall trends of Americans and to see that there's a downward slide on the number of people who believe their taxes are fair. And you can count me among one of those that believe it is not fair. I've had the pleasure of paying the IRS even more for the last 2 years, which is really frustrating and infuriating. But the point is that there is definitely a trend on the economic side of more and more people seeing that they're not getting the bang for their buck. Whether they agree with taxes or not, they're not seeing the return that they expect to see for those tax monies collected. And so that's, an interesting bit of information to have and, you know, something that came out a couple weeks ago that I didn't have a chance to get to. Another interesting bit of news was that the Koch brothers came out a couple of weeks ago with interest in purchasing some of the nation's struggling newspapers. And that's obviously an interesting thing. And some of these papers are some of the most liberal papers in the country. Companies like the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune, these are very, very liberal papers. And even ones that are only moderately liberal, like the Orlando Sentinel, the Tribune Company is the one that owns a number of these outlets. And they're struggling financially. And the Tribune Company is a $7 billion media conglomerate that owns 23 television stations, as well as a slew of papers. And basically, they are looking to sell some of their assets, specifically the newspapers, because the newspaper industry is changing. And it's a very interesting thing. So many of these newspapers could save themselves if they would use their brains, if they had people that really understood marketing. I recently talked with a reporter, and of course he has no decision-making power, but I talked to a reporter about how the media could save itself. All these online papers now are charging monthly, and for what I want to read in the paper, I believe it's too much money. They want to charge $15 for a subscription, and the only thing I'm really interested in is political stuff. I don't care about the life section or the events section or the obituaries or any of that other stuff. And it surprises me that no one has figured out that they should be selling those stories, that those sections, a la carte. You charge me $5 a month for political only, I'm very likely to buy all of the political articles at $5 a month. I am not likely to buy for $15 a month or $20 a month. That's just too much. And that's what I'm getting at is, it's amazing to me these newspapers haven't figured this out. And as a result, because they're not listening to their consumers, not, you know, able to adapt to new technology, they're in deep trouble. And so as the parent companies look to eliminate some of these boat anchors on their bottom line, the Koch brothers are interested in purchasing them. Well, there was another story that came out here just recently on all of this, that the staff of the LA Times, half of them have pledged that if the Koch brothers buy the LA Times, that they will quit, that they will leave the LA Times. And, you know, quite honestly, that's rather silly. At the end of the day, a job is a job, and you may not like the work environment, or you may. If they edit what you want to say or report, then you have good reason to quit. We saw that with in Louisville, where John David Deich was annoyed that they were editing him and keeping him from writing a story about how to save the paper industry. And so as a result, he left. And that's legitimate. But certainly there's no reason to leave immediately until there's action being taken to specifically mute you. Just because someone owns the paper, and these guys should all know this, the owners are so far removed from the daily operations of the news that it really doesn't matter. And that's kind of the funniest part about it, is it doesn't matter. It doesn't make it a lick of difference. It's not going to change anything about the paper overnight. And if it goes a direction that they don't like, then they can, you know, take their time and go look for another job somewhere else. But I can tell you that regardless of who it is or why, they're going to have to make these changes. They're going to have to modernize their business model in some way if they want to survive. And it doesn't matter if it's the Koch brothers or George Soros or anybody. It doesn't matter who owns them. They're going to have to modernize and get themselves in a position where they are making money, quite simply, where they're making money. And like I said, it's just kind of amazing to me that the newspapers haven't figured that out yet. But to get all concerned about the Koch brothers buying the company, you know, before they make any changes, just to say, well, if they buy it, we quit, that's rather immature, really. At the end of the day, you can be principled and you can say, I'm not going to work for such and such and so and so. But I certainly hope that those folks don't have families or anyone that relies on their income as a result, because it is the height of irresponsibility in general to quit a job before you get a new one. That's one of those things you learn early on in life. You never quit a job before you have the next one lined up and ready to go. Another story we never really got to that I wanted to get to weeks ago is a story about the EPA and some new regulations that are coming for gasoline and how pure they must be after being or while being refined. So the EPA has these different levels or tiers of rulemaking that they've created to reduce pollution. Now, Tier 1 and Tier 2 are in effect today and have seen a result of a lower sulfur and other impurities in gasoline. What's about to take effect, or what's coming down the pipeline here, no pun intended, is what they call Tier 3 rulemaking. The problem with this Tier 3, and really it's a problem with anything, right? The closer you get to perfection, the exponentially higher the cost. And so for rather little return, you have a much higher cost, which is why things are never perfect. I mean, to make things perfect would mean that everything would have to cost a fortune. The problem or point, I guess, with this is that the rules that they have in place have resulted in cleaner fuels that burn cleaner and thus do pollute less in the environment. But these new rules that are coming down are not going to significantly reduce pollution as compared to the first two tiers in place, and are going to cost a substantial amount more. So basically we're going to have a much higher price for very little return comparatively to the first rule or existing rules today. And so it's a little bit frustrating, because this is the kind of stuff that just hurts consumers. It's not going to have a significant impact on pollution in general, but it's going to have a significant impact on the wallets of everyday Americans. And when you take away, it's actually kind of an interesting conversation. I've had conversations with some folks here recently about how the old traditional monopolies have been busted down and broken down by the ability to travel, by the ability to basically technology has broken down the old monopolies. You look at a telephone company, you know, the FCC came in and broke up AT&T in the early 80s. But more so than anything they ever did, cell phones have revolutionized telecommunications. And so technology has gone further to create new competition, a true free market scenario, than the FCC ever could have. And likewise, if you go back further to the era of the robber barons, the way that they were able to keep their tight grip on the public and the reason for people wanting to form unions and all of that was because transportation was very limited. It was difficult to pick up and move, much more difficult than it is today. So if you increase transportation costs under the auspices of lowering pollution just a small notch and you significantly increase the cost, you're going to see just a return or a move back toward that old time, the times when it was difficult to escape bad situations. By increasing transportation costs, you are reducing our technological advances that we've made over time. These technologies that we've been able to overcome, some of these old natural monopolies and unnatural monopolies even, it's frustrating to me. We're actually hurting ourselves while supposedly trying to help ourselves. And that's the stuff we have to be very keenly aware of, is cause and effect. What are the consequences of actions? All actions have consequences. And so you need to look at the broader ramifications of these types of regulations. And so while certainly reducing pollution is a good goal in general, because no one wants to live in a polluted cesspool. I mean, if you do, raise your hand, but I can't imagine that anybody's really raising their hand seriously at this time. No one wants to live in a polluted area, and no one wants to live amongst pollution. But there are certain things that we do live in no matter what. I mean, technically speaking, the sun puts out radiation, which is damaging to the body. But at the same time, the sun is nourishment for the earth that creates the plants that eventually we eat, whether directly or indirectly through other animals. And so the point is that there will never be pure safety. There will never be absolute safety. It's impossible for that to occur. And if you want to try to get to perfect safety, infinite safety, you have to give up every liberty. And even then, you're not going to get that safety. You're just turning over the responsibility for yourself to others rather than keeping that responsibility for yourself. It's just a frustrating thing to me. You know, these bureaucracies, they always have to go further. They always push the envelope beyond what the public wants. They always push the envelope beyond what was ever intended for them. It's just amazing. But what's probably most amazing of all is that we, the public, let them get away with it. Now, I know it's not always easy to figure out when you're being manipulated. I mean, that's part of this whole thing, right? I saw a interview with some folks talking about Bloomberg in New York, and it was amazing. They were actually praising Bloomberg the one person was praising Bloomberg because he was a student of behavioral psychology and knew how to manipulate people. And I just had to think to myself, wow, how absolutely terrible is that? That this person who is praising the smoking bans and the soda bans and all these various stupid programs is basically applauding the manipulation of people. That's not good. And it's very easy, if you're not paying attention, to be manipulated. You have to be aware that you're being manipulated in order to stop being manipulated. And the way that this nannyist group is able to continue is that they do little things, little subtle things, and it's multiple subtle things to push you, to corral you, to put you into a little box, to make you go one way or another, to take away legitimate choices that are not, in their eyes, good for you, and to only give you the option of choice A or choice B, even though there may have otherwise been a C, a D, an E, etc. And to me, that's horrible. I, as an individual, want to know all of my choices, and then I, as an adult, can rationally make a good decision on which way I want to go. And you know what? For 99% of the public, choice A and choice B might be the right way. But there's always going to be that minority, that small minority, where choice A and choice B are not the best choices for that individual. You know, when I was growing up, I had low blood pressure. And I was prescribed to eat more salt. I kid you not, my doctor, my pediatrician told me to eat more salt. Now, Bloomberg's in the process of kicking salt out of the city of New York. Now, maybe for 70%, 80% of the public, they don't need more salt. But for myself, when I was younger anyway, I needed more salt. And so it's an example of how these broad policies, these broad decision-making pushes, as they call them on their side, have negative consequences for us. We lose our individual choice, and thus we lose our individuality. When they take choices away from us, we no longer are fully individual. We're relying on the state, whether we know it or not, we're relying on the state to make decisions for us. I have an article here. Cass Sunstein, he wrote the book Nudge, which was the original handbook on how this is happening. And the book actually has the audacity to call what they're doing libertarian paternalism. What they figured out was that when the communists and that, they came in and they gave people one choice. You had to do this one thing. People rejected that. People reject being told what to do automatically. It's part of who we are as Americans. But what they figured out was that if you present two or three choices to the public, that they accept those choices and don't see that they've had three or four other choices taken away from them. And because they don't see those choices taken away, and because they still get to make a choice, that the people don't push back nearly as hard. Now, you hear that in the smoking ban fight where they say, well, we're not asking you not to smoke. We're just asking you to smoke outside. You'll hear that with the soda ban. Well, you know, we're not telling you you can't drink soda. We're just telling you you can't buy that much at one time. There's no reason you need to drink that much at one time. And, hey, we're not telling you you can't have salt on food. We're just telling you that it can't be in the food prepared. You have to add it yourself, which anybody who's done any cooking knows that's not going to be as good as it being cooked in. So Cass Sunstein now has released a new book, a follow-up to Nudge, and this book is called Simpler, The Future of Government. And essentially, he talks about how, in summary here, and I haven't read the book yet, I'm reading a summary of the book. Essentially, it takes what was written in Nudge as far as the government manipulating choices and calling it libertarian paternalism, and now how is that going to be applied to the government? How is that going to be applied to your life? What regulations are going to come from the bureaucracy? And make no mistake, this is all done through the bureaucracy. It's all expansion of what was originally intended for a true emergency is now coming in to take over and run your life. We have to get control. In the second half hour, we're going to do a replay of one of the best of shows or a segment from a previous show where we talk about the health departments and how they've gone beyond their original mandate. And it's not just health departments. It's not just the EPA. So many things. There's in my industry, we call it scope creep. When you're working on a project and you have these defined parameters and this idea in mind that, hey, we've got this problem or this issue or this goal, and these are the ways we're going to get there to get to a resolution. And somewhere during the plan, things start deviating off and more things get added in and things that were completely not originally supposed to be part of that plan, whether it was because they weren't conceived of or whether it was because they weren't the intent, these things get added in. And unless someone's willing to throw a red flag and say, wait, stop, no, this is not what we signed up for. Unless, in this scenario, the public is willing to throw up that flag and say, wait, no, stop, this is not the right approach, it'll continue. At the end of the day, the public is what empowers the bureaucracy. And unfortunately, the bureaucracy is oftentimes one step removed from the public. We, the public, get to elect people to political office. And then those people in the political offices, based on certain time schedules and whatnot, get to appoint the bureaucracy. And so they can't even necessarily clean house per se. But it's important that we really pay attention to who we're electing and what they actually stand for. Words are nice, but actions mean so much more than words. And when there are so many people out there that are willing to say, well, you know, this guy didn't turn out like he was supposed to, but boy, that other guy would have been worse. Well, you can't excuse bad behavior because of a perception that your alternative or your perceived only alternative in some sort of false dichotomy would have been worse. We the voters can and should demand more. It's the only way we're going to solve this. It's the only way that we can get control of this monster. We have to be in control. And it starts with knowing who you're electing. Don't vote party, vote candidate. Don't let people say, that guy's got no chance, that guy's got no shot. Don't let the buzz drive your decision. Vote for the best person, not against the worst. It's that system where we've been told we have to vote one or the other. And the rules and regulations put into place to try to limit our choices to only two. That's the problem. That's what's caused all of our issues. That is our true enemy. Our true enemy is the system that only purports to give us two choices, that specifically works against having a third, a fourth, a fifth, or a sixth choice. There are better ways to do this. There are better ways to elect candidates. Candidates who will stand up to the bureaucracy. Candidates who will fire those who work against the interests of the public. It's up to us, the voters, to put those people into office. It's up to us, the public, to be aware of our choices. And at the end of the day, it's up to us, the people who are aware, to spread the word to those who aren't, to make them aware of the candidate who is the best I know I've done that personally. I'm not going to get into the details of it, but I've done that in my own way. And I know that others have too. We need more voices, more people who are paying attention, telling and educating those who aren't paying attention. And understand, those that don't pay attention, there's lots of reasons why. And many of them aren't even going to want to know the full story or get a real understanding. And while unfortunate, it is a reality. But what we can do is tell those folks, hey, if you haven't made a decision in this race, why don't you vote for this guy or this woman or whoever? Because, yeah, they say they can't win, but you know what? It doesn't matter. If it's such a lock for this other person anyway, then who cares? Let's start voting better. Let's vote for someone who's actually going to do something good. Only when the public starts doing that will things get better. We can sit here and flip-flop between parties. Oh, well, it's the Republicans, and now it's the Democrats. And, oh, look, the Democrats screwed up worse than the Republicans screwed up. And so now we're going to put Republicans back in. But have they learned anything? Have they changed? Not really. And then after 8 or 12 years of that, people will be sick of that, and we'll flip back to the Democrats. And it's a cycle. It's the same cycle over and over and over. It's got to stop. The cycle has to be broken. And the only way the cycle can be broken is if we break the cycle. We perpetuate the system because we allow the system to corral us in a way to perpetuate itself. We can stop it. We have the power to do it. And we should. That, in the end, is what it's going to take to turn this whole thing around. These bureaucracies, these runaway bureaucracies, can only be stopped by us voting in candidates who are going to be willing to take a stand against the bureaucracy, willing to cut them off when they need to be cut off. That's what it's going to take. So I ask, if you're one of those folks that just vote straight party ticket, don't be. Pay attention to who your choices are. I haven't been a straight party ticket voter since 1996. And I really believe that now that I am an informed voter, I am helping to fix the system. I'm voting for the best candidate. And in races where there is no good candidate, I don't vote for either one. I don't believe in voting against a candidate. Voting against a candidate does not solve a problem. We need better candidates, someone to vote for, someone who will help us break the cycle. That's what we need to demand of our candidates, of whatever party. Someone who's going to look out for the interests of the public, and by that I mean they're going to leave the public alone, and they're going to fight the bureaucracy who wants to micromanage every single detail of our lives. That's who we need, strong leaders with a vision and the courage to stand up to the bureaucracy. So, as I mentioned, the second half of the show, I'm going to replay part of a previous show. And so we're kind of reaching the halfway point here, and I do want to kind of wrap this up. Folks, I want to thank you for tuning in this week. I apologize again for not being here live, for not being able to take your calls. It's a work thing. I apologize. I do have a real job, and unfortunately, it does get in the way of my extracurricular activities, including this show. So I apologize, but I will be back here with you all next week live on the show. I don't believe there's anything that's going to prevent me from doing that, and I always prefer to have the show live. I always prefer to have your interaction with the show, and I always prefer to have your calls. into the show, because this isn't a monologue for me. This isn't supposed to be me preaching to people. This is about all of us working together to make our world, our individual lives, better. And that's what we're trying to do here. So I thank you folks again. Hang on through the break. You'll hear a best of segment, and tune in next week, and we'll be back live. Folks, I hope you have a good week, and after this quick break here, we'll be back with the best of and then the end of the show. So thanks again, and see you all next week. We'll be right back.
are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the My View Matters Radio Network. We're here every Sunday night at 7 p.m. until 8 Eastern Time. For those not aware, I have been involved with a group called Northern Kentucky Choice for a number of years now. Our group in Northern Kentucky, we've been on this for several years now. My group, Northern Kentucky Choice, was instrumental in helping to roll back or to repeal ban in Campbell County. We helped stop the ban completely in Boone County, and we got the ban that did eventually pass in Kenton County rolled back to just a restaurant ban. So I've been involved in this issue. People say, well, why are you involved in the smoking ban, smoking ban? Yes, it is. It has nothing to do with that. It has to deal with the broader implications of where this leads. And where it leads is exactly where the Court of Appeals came out on Thursday. The Court of Appeals ruled on Thursday, overruling a circuit court decision, that health departments have the unregulated, unlimited ability to pass any regulation they want without the need for any enabling legislation, so long as it's done in the sphere or realm or can be somehow tied to public health. And that means anything, folks. What you eat is public health. What you breathe is public health. How long you sleep, public health. What you drink, public health. Everything is public health. Now, the health departments were created to deal with epidemics. They were created back in the 50s to deal with things like polio outbreaks or smallpox outbreaks. That was the purpose. That was the reason for these boards to exist. But not unlike other bureaucracies and boards left over from the 50s and the 60s, they found themselves a new mandate and found themselves a new reason to exist. And so now they have successfully argued to the Court of Appeals, who has overturned the district decision, that they did not have the authority to create legislation for themselves. The Court of Appeals has now said in a 2-1 decision that the health departments can do anything they want. Now, the case was brought because the smoking ban was dropped in by the health department, but not legislated in by the local government, the county or the city, and specifically the county and the city fought it. They didn't want the health department to put a smoking ban in. And there may even be, in some cases, a legislative desire to put a smoking ban in, but now it's, hey, you don't have the authority to do this. We're the legislative body. You're not a legislative body. We are. And what's happened now literally is that the power of anything in public health has been completely and totally usurped from the local government. It throws the concept of home rule right out the window. It takes policing powers away from the local government, controls those policing powers away. This is a very, very, very bad precedent. Everyone here is familiar with the 16-ounce rule in New York City. That's exactly where we're heading now. The health departments have been empowered by this ruling to do exactly that. They can now say it is a public health hazard to allow, a health epidemic. Whoa, epidemic, got to use the word epidemic. Because epidemics used to be polio and smallpox where people would get sick and die a week later. Now we're an epidemic if we cut the last 10 years off of a 75-year lifespan. That's an epidemic today. As one of the jokes goes around, that's a first world problem. Anyway, the point is that they've now been empowered to do anything they want. Anything. And that's very, 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 very bad. All right, so I'm going to bring this caller on here. Caller, are you there?
I sure am, Ken. Daniel Williams, how are you?
Daniel, hey, Ken Woolman, it's good to hear from you, my friend.
Well, I wanted to call in and talk to you about your tobacco thing.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying that, I have a different take on it, but the one thing you said was, where is this all going to lead in the context of overreach of government? But I'd say I think for the future, whether it's near or far, it's going to be a moot point. I think that the electronic cigarettes, the e-cigs, the blue,
yep,
which I think is the most prominent brand out there, that's where,
yep,
the future of smoking is. And
oh, sure. But you know what? The health department, this ban that they just dropped in, It bans those two.
Well,
yeah.
You mean you can't smoke e-cigarettes in your restaurant?
You're not allowed to smoke e-cigarettes indoors, no. And the reasoning is they say they look too much like the real thing. And it gets into where these guys, the mind frame or the mindset of these folks, they actually see the act of smoking as offensive. It offends them to see someone smoke, even if they can't smell the smoke, even if they can't really, you know, they just see them across the street. That offends them. And you'll see this new rating system that they're putting in on movies. There's a big push to get smoking removed from every movie. Any movie that has smoking in it will have to have a special rating or warning. This is that movement. Their real goal is to make the act of smoking abnormal, to denormalize the act of smoking, to make it so that people go, ew.
Where is Kentucky in the scheme of things, percentage-wise, of states that do that? Down here in Florida, Kentucky is the first state I've heard of that they want to ban or you can't use e-cigarettes. Can you currently use them, and the new legislation is going to ban them? I mean, what's the current status?
They are currently legal for use at a national level. There's been a big push to try to make them outright illegal. That is funded by and pushed by the same people that are pushing the smoking ban. Their claim behind it is that these e-cigarettes haven't been tested, but I don't know about you. I've seen a lot of people using them, and nobody's cropped over dead from it because we would have heard about that.
They're just pure, the legislation is going to change in some places and be stupid in others, but as far as the actual future of nicotine consumption, I think e-cigarettes is where it's going to go.
And I tend to agree with you on that because you take away
pure,
the nasty stuff.
Yes, I mean, and it's a more refined, more elegant, and it's a pure nicotine delivery system. You know, screw the smoke and all the other ritualistic things that associate smoking, and once you get the old-timers, the old-school guys and ladies that have the ritualistic aspect of actually smoking and doing that, younger people and people who have been smoking for a shorter period of time, I really think they're going to switch to e-cig. It's going to be the cool thing. You can smoke them anywhere. And it's pure hidden nicotine without the, you know, supposed bad side effects of inhaling smoke. So I think that's where it's going
to
be.
I tend to agree with you that that's where everything's moving. They are all moving to the e-cigarettes. And to preempt that, we have seen here in the ban that we turned down or turned away in northern Kentucky had a provision against e-cigarette use. The bans that have been dropped in by these health departments, because Bullitt County wasn't the first, it's just the first to go to court, where the health department just put one in without any enabling legislation. They all contain bans on e-cigarette use. And it's not right. There's no reason to do that. They've proven that a person who uses an e-cigarette exhales is water vapor.
I mean, down here people smoke them in church, they smoke them in restaurants, they smoke them in theaters. You know, it's great.
Well, and that's common sense,
crazy.
Science solving a problem. Well, it's not just Kentucky. This is nationwide. Make no mistake.
No, I know, but
comes from these national orgs.
Right, but right now you can smoke them in Kentucky, and are there any states where they can't be smoked at this point in time? I understand there's going to be a blowback and all this kind of stuff against them. That's just part of the idiocy of prohibition of any type of thing. But, I mean, is there any place where you can't smoke them? I mean, these and the places that are proposing laws, what are the chances these laws are going to be passed or be able to be slipped in without legislation? I mean, these are things that are on the drawing board for the opposition, but have they succeeded anywhere in the country? I've not heard of any place where these e-cigs don't work.
Well, no, e-cigarettes are now banned. They are banned for indoor use in Bullitt County if the law stands. They are banned actually already today by the ban put in by the Clark County Board of Health today. They actually came back after the fact and added that in specifically.
You know of any other places in the country that are following suit?
I can't tell you that offhand. I don't know. But again, it's the same folks pushing this everywhere. They have their little people. They give out grants. They all take their little marching orders. And it's a very circle, very much a circle, right? And that's also how they get their studies done. They do these studies.
Are they liberal groups or conservative groups?
I don't think it's typically a liberal or conservative thing. It's people who absolutely despise smoking. It's interesting. About 15 years ago, Well, no, I mean, 15 years ago, I saw a study that showed that about one third of the population inherently dislikes smoke. One third of the population is inherently drawn toward smoke, and one third of the population just doesn't care. And it's that third of the population that absolutely despises it. I talked to somebody on Facebook. I was talking to them about the ramifications of this. And this guy's a conservative, right? And I'm trying to explain to him the ramifications of this ruling, that it doesn't just apply to smoking. It applies to soda and salt and fat and anything, because anything could be a public health problem. They just declare it so, and it is so. And they didn't get it. They were still happy with this because, doggone it, smoking is going to go away in Bullitt County. And they don't even live in Bullitt County. It's a stupid thing. But they're happy that it's going away in Bullitt County because they hate smoke that much that they're willing to sacrifice every other liberty they have in order to get rid of smoke. It's ridiculous.
I'd move.
Well, you know, the thing is, the one advantage we have in Kentucky and everywhere, really, I mean, everywhere has this kind of, is that you live in the right spot, you know the right people, you can get around any law anyway. And especially one as stupid as this. I mean, you know, I've for years said there is no one that puts a gun to your head and compels you to walk into a smoking establishment. And our answer was put a sign on the door that says, "We smoke in here." And then it's
I wonder what the AMA's position is on e-cigarettes. Nicotine has never been the issue. The issue has always been the inhalation of smoke. They've never really bitched about nicotine as far as, you know, being a bad drug. Whenever you see any of the smoking crap, it's all about smoking. If they don't call it nicotine, they call it smoking. So they've never really cared about the nicotine, and it's just basically the smoke. So I would think that the small groups of tidy whities that you got going on in your area would probably be in the minority. It would seem to me that this would be a welcome improvement, and that's why I'm wondering what the AMA's position is. I would think the AMA would be neutral at best, or neutral at worst and supportive at best, because smoke has always been the issue.
I'm trying to remember the AMA's position. I know the American Lung Association, the Cancer Society, all those guys, they're all co-conspirators in the ban movement, and they're on board with banning the inhalers as well. And, in fact, they were involved in the case. There was a federal case where the FDA tried to regulate and eliminate the inhalers. And that was struck down by the courts. They said, you do not have the authority to do that. You cannot prove that there's any damage being done by these inhalers. Their response was, well, they can't be proven that they're not doing damage because they haven't gone through, they wanted them to go through the FDA trials and all that stuff. And the reality of that situation is that a big part of the smoking ban movement is funded by the people who sell the replacement gums and patches and all that stuff.
Well,
so
of course,
it's
competing interests that are out there. But if they're worried about there's no clinical trials or any type of information, they can just take smoking now and work backwards, because they've got a list of all the chemicals that are involved when you smoke a cigarette, and nicotine is one of them. So they can work backwards in the research and say, okay, the e-cigarettes, okay, we take out the smoke, we take out everything but the nicotine. So I don't see where that would be a hard argument to counter. You know, it's like, hey, you don't need to do any research. They are proven. This isn't a new system. This is an existing system with less components.
Right. And you know, I don't know. The inhalers, they're after those two. And you know, this is not based in science or rationality. I mean, rational people would say, hey, label a business or an establishment or any public or any place open to the public that allows smoking, label them and then leave it up to the consumer to decide whether or not to go in there. There's really no difference in that versus the warning on the pack of the pack of cigarettes or the warning on lots of different things. And it's up to the consumer to make that decision whether or not they want to engage in commerce in that facility. I mean, it's common sense, but that's not what this is about. This isn't about common sense at all.
You think they get money from the tobacco growers? Or they're against, well, the people that are against the e-cigs. But you're saying they're against everything.
No, I don't think so. The tobacco growers, the nicotine is actually drawn from the tobacco plant. So they still get their cut either
way. Can't they synthesize that or do something?
Maybe, but if they synthesize it, they're going to end up in a nasty territory of FDA regulation of a new drug. Whereas right now, they're simply, you know, taking out the pure extract of what is already available on the market in a completely legal form. So I don't know. And it's extraordinarily frustrating. And this is the scary part is that everybody, I get it, you know, you don't like smoke. I get that. I mean, there are things I don't like when I go to places, too. And my answer is I just don't go there anymore.
I mean, you don't have to like everything, but if it's not noxious, if it's not toxic and it's not physically or abusive, then I don't give it if you're, I mean, excuse me, I can't say that word. I don't care if you're upset about me, what I'm doing. But if I'm doing something that's not hurting you, then shut up. I mean, there are people out there that just are so unhappy with themselves that they can't stand a moment of joy in anyone else. And they'll work, they'll do everything they can to make their lives, our lives, as miserable as theirs. And you just have to accept that those people are out there and you know, key their cars or something.
Well, and we're running short on time, Daniel, so I'm going to put you back on hold. I thank you so much for calling in. Always good to
talk
to you, my friend.
All right.
But the key is here, again, these nannies are never going to stop being nannies. And if you think, oh, well, it's only going to stop here, you know, it'll only go to smoking, it won't go any further, you have to look no further than New York and California where these bans started, where the movement started for banning stuff that's bad for you, and see where it goes. They're 10 to 15 years ahead of us. But we know where we're going. We've seen the path in front of us. It's there. And to ignore, because of your absolute disdain for smoke, to ignore the long-term where this is heading, you're making a huge mistake. And this ruling is a huge mistake. We're going to have problems now. If this ruling stands, hold on tight, folks, because they're going to be able to regulate everything, what you eat, what you drink, what you sleep, what you know, where you work, everything will be regulated. And that's where we're heading. So please get a hold of your legislator. Tell them you need to get control of these health departments. We need to get something done to make sure that this cannot stand. We need to rein in runaway bureaucracy. Folks, another show in the books. Thank you all. Tune in next week for another edition of Liberty Unbridled. My View Matters Radio Network.